On today's episode, loving your inner ballerina, dodgeball versus the Steve Harvey Show, and we stumble upon the cure for all racism. All that and more on today's episode of Fat Advice with Lori Beth Denberg.
Help me out, almighty Lori Beth Denberg. Give me the vital information so I get the red thoughts. Who do ya? The church of Lori Beth is in session, and we're reading from the scriptures of vital information. Talking my goddess and my savior, my LBT. Just tell me what's going on with me. Oh my goddess and my savior, my LBT. Just tell me what's going on with me.
My name is Lori Beth Denberg, and thank you for listening to Bad Advice with Lori Beth Denberg. Woo. With me, as always, is Clark Crozer.
Hello.
Hello, Clark. How are you today?
I'm doing pretty good.
Yes.
It's a good day. It's kind of rainy here in LA.
It is.
But I like rainy.
You've got your COVID hair in a ponytail.
I do.
To just give that business in the front to hide the party in the back.
Right. And then I have to worry about that trail of water that comes because I just took a shower. So yes. There's just like a trail of water running down my back.
You didn't just take a shower like while I was waiting outside. It was before I got here.
I have very thick hair.
Yes.
Anyway, how are you? How are you doing?
I am doing okay. We've got quite an episode today. So
yeah.
Before we get into it, and I'll explain it a little more, we're going to shill. This is us shilling. Please, if you like this podcast.
Yes.
I guess if you don't like this podcast too, but if you like this podcast, subscribe. Tell your friends about it. Ask them to subscribe.
Yeah. We've really been enjoying doing this, both of us. And the only thing that'll get us to do it more is if we have subscribers.
Yes.
And commenters and people that love us.
So if you could go subscribe on iTunes, on wherever you smush your podcasts, and leave us a rating and leave a comment.
Yeah. And share us with your friends too. If you think there's somebody that you might like us, let them know.
Yeah. So far we only have a few comments, and one of them is from Clark's wife, Karen. And I didn't know that. It was under some other name, and I'm reading it and I go, is that from Karen? He's like, yeah.
She's
so we don't want to have a restaurant with just Yelp reviews from our friends.
Exactly.
We want to, first of all, we also really want to know what you think.
Yeah.
Because feedback, that's why I said, not only if you like us, but so do that, please, right now. No, not right now. Listen to the podcast right now.
Well, unless you can multitask.
Exactly. But this is kind of going to be a different kind of episode.
Yeah, a very special Bad Advice.
This is a very special Bad Advice with Lori Beth Denberg. I put out the call to you guys for questions about body image and weight loss, and we got such a response.
Yeah.
That we've decided to do the entire show on this topic.
Yep.
So, and honestly, we got so many questions that we'll probably do another one in the future. Like, you guys really had a lot to say, a lot to ask, and really great questions and all different aspects of looking at these issues from different viewpoints.
Right.
So today's episode is going to be a little different. It's all going to be on the same topic.
Yeah.
But it won't be boring. Or will it?
Oh, no, never. This is going to be very fun, and we're going to try and keep it as lighthearted as we possibly can.
Yeah, it's a deep subject. It gets into a lot of deep subject for me as well.
Yeah.
And let's see what we got.
Let's do it. Let's break it open. All right. We're going to start with question number one from our friend Juliana from Facebook. And Juliana asks, at what age did you start feeling your body wasn't the right shape? For me, it was about 8 or 9 years old. I remember being a little ballerina in my leotard and tights and thinking, I need to suck in my stomach. That was from Juliana.
Juliana.
Yeah.
I love you twice. And I bet if we saw pictures, you'd be the cutest fucking ballerina on two legs. I like picture you with gorgeous, long, curly hair, just right? Like looking like a movie star ballerina.
On tiptoes.
On point. So thanks for that question. I was just thinking about it, and I think before I had a weight problem, I can't remember a time when I felt comfortable in my own skin. Mm. I was tall. I was always in the back row of pictures in elementary school.
Right.
And I just felt, and of course I had that haircut that we've discussed many times before.
Yes, the fat boy.
I never felt pretty. I never felt comfortable. I never felt feminine.
Yeah.
And so it was interesting for me to listen to that question and say, you know, when did that start? I would say definitely by the end of, not even the end, maybe third or fourth grade, where I actually probably started putting on more weight than was normal or usual.
Right.
And definitely by the end of, you know, junior high. Mm. Wait, was that junior high? No, it was the end of elementary school.
Elementary school.
When I had my bat mitzvah.
Yeah.
Because we talked about that the other day. And I remember that being like, how am I going to find a dress? And I'm, you know, I already was fat. It was already a problem.
Right.
As it was in junior high and high school. And now I look back at pictures of me in high school and I'd go, God, I'd give fucking anything to be that weight down, again. I'm like, I look amazing. Weight.
Yeah, right.
Which is so sad because I know that's not how I felt or how I pictured myself. That's not how I operated in the world.
Yeah.
But, you know, I can't remember a time that this wasn't an issue. And it was also a family issue. So it was always
hereditary.
Yeah. Or, well, I don't know if it's, I mean, it's nature versus nurture. Yeah. Who knows?
Yeah.
Because it's the same as saying, you know, my family, you know, we were alcoholics, you know, we were food addicts, you know, food was whatever the thing was.
Right.
So that's what I grew up with.
Right.
And that's when it started. Definitely the weight came on throughout elementary school, but even before that, I never felt comfortable.
Mm. What about, you know, we did a play in high school together, a couple plays, but we did one play that was a Neil Simon play called Rumors.
Rumors.
And the whole play is like supposed to be an upper class dinner party, right?
Yeah.
So we all had to, I was in a tux the whole show and you were in like a ball gown, weren't you? What about then? What about special occasions? Like you really tried, right? Were there moments where you felt like you really put an effort into it? So you felt at least a little better? Were there ever in those moments where you tried and succeeded or even tried and failed?
The first thing I thought you were going a different way with your question. Like in Rumors, it was a, you know, upper class dinner party.
Yeah.
So they made the dress from me.
Yeah.
Because you can't buy something off the rack to fit me. Now there's a lot more stores and stuff to buy stuff.
Right.
But, you know, no, it was kind of this ugly, jokey dress. It fit for the character, too.
I was a crazy
woman named Cookie.
Right.
But, you know, that was had to be made for me.
Right.
And no, getting dressed up to go somewhere nice is a nightmare.
Yeah.
It's a nightmare. There have been a few times where I've had some really cute stuff that I was happy about.
A nightmare to do, but while it's happening, do you feel better? Does it boost your confidence at least a little?
A couple times.
Yeah.
There were two times where I wasn't nominated. The Steve Harvey Show was nominated for an NAACP award,
which
we won.
Oh, nice.
Best show.
Did you do the acceptance speech?
I did. I did not.
Oh, okay.
But I did go up.
Oh, okay, good.
To like, I was kind of like, okay. And then someone was like, go up there.
Right.
So I went up with the cast. And for that occasion, I asked the wardrobe chickie from our show to help me have a dress made.
Yeah.
Like a real
custom made
fancy thing, which I loved.
Yeah.
And so that was a cool experience. It was made specifically for me by a real seamstress. Not quite the same workmanship that was done in high school.
High school, yeah.
By, you know, Becky.
Yeah, exactly.
Hey, Becky. So that was good. And then there was this one year, you know, the all that theme song. And the opening credits.
Right, right, right.
You'd always see us like bouncing on the trampoline.
Yeah.
Which I was very uncomfortable with because I was fat and it was like jumping up and down and my body jiggling.
Right.
Which is why you see me in one of my most famous shots, like jumping with the corn.
Right.
Because it was funny. It was a distraction and I could kind of cover myself up a little bit. But it ends up being like an iconic, awesome, you know, solidifies my tumultuous relationship with the corn.
The Iroquois.
But at one point, I think it was season four, maybe three or four.
Okay.
We did a different kind of opening that was very glamorous and very like old school.
With the
like the photographers. Yes. It was like a red carpet kind of thing.
I remember that.
Very old school, like 30s, 40s Hollywood.
Right.
And so I was in a dress for that. I don't remember if it was made specifically for me, but my hair was all done and my makeup was done in a way that it never really had been. I mean, I'd be a character, an old lady. When I was, you know, me, when I was Lori Beth in a sketch, I always wanted it to this day. I never get glammed up.
Yeah.
I just want to look kind of natural and young, you know, it's
right.
So that day on that shoot, I was really glammed up. And I remember I kept looking at myself and like, wow, like I really was kind of I don't know. I just kept staring at myself. I mean, like I was out there, but, you know, in the mirror, whatever, when I was in the hair and makeup, just being like, I look so different. And this is what a glamorous person looks like. And it's me.
Right.
So that was a really interesting kind of a thing.
Moment.
Yes.
Like a quick little moment.
Yeah. But in general, wardrobe fittings are hard.
Yeah.
And, even though now there are a lot more stores for bigger people.
Right.
And so there's much more of a, you know, variety and stuff to pick from.
Right.
But it's always been a struggle.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, let's continue on this. I have two more questions here. They're actually, you know, they have a lot to do with each other. So I figured what I'd do is I'd read both of these questions together at the same time.
Perfect.
And let you answer both of them however you'd like.
Gotcha, smacha.
So one is from Steffi Lynn, Steffi Lynn 86. And the other one is from Kit Kat, Kit Kat, Kit. So Steffi Lynn 86 says, so I always got picked on because of my weight. Mm. I didn't start to gain weight until I was like 12 years old. Now I'm 34 and still struggling with it. What do you tell people who picked on you or judged you because of your weight? What was your escape? Mine as a kid was, of course, music and watching my TV shows. That's what helped me through it. And I just want to say thank you. And then Kit Kat, Kit Kat, Kit says, how do we handle strangers calling us fat?
Mm.
Ignore them? Try to educate them about fat phobia and about policing women's bodies? Should we have a sassy comeback ready? Thanks.
Mm, those are great questions.
Yeah.
I mean, they're awful questions.
Yeah, right.
But they're horrible questions, but they're
appropriate.
Yeah. Part of this is, you know, when you have this, even when you have an addiction, when you're an alcoholic, when you're fat and you have a problem with food, you think you're the only one.
Yeah.
You can see there's other fat people there, but you think you're the only one going through it. You're the only one that feels that way. You're the only one that eats that way.
Right.
And so a lot of these comments, you know, or questions, I should say, brought up the same issues. Like these two, they're different, but they're the same.
Right, exactly.
So that's part of why I think this is so cool, because we cannot be alone.
Right.
Because we're not. We just don't always know it.
Exactly.
So getting picked on, it's funny, I remember in high school on a couple occasions, you know, high school's great anyway. Everyone's so nice the time.
Absolutely.
And it's a magical time for most of us. And, but I remember so many instances of, you know, a group of guys who, I mean, now I can look back and say a group of kids.
Right.
But like a group of guys going down the hall that would make fun of me. And like the way they would make fun of me is to like point to their friend and be like, he likes you.
Right.
Like it was so embarrassing for them to say that about the guy.
Right.
Or to pretend the ground was shaking when I went by or, you know, whatever it was. So stuff like that. And I would always think, I mean, I was already so far down to start with.
Yeah.
I already had.
By high school.
By my life.
Yeah. Well, I'm saying by the time you got to high school.
Yes. By the time I got to high school, I was very deeply depressed and wounded and a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
Which leads to problems with weight and drugs and all that kind of stuff. That I was just kind of beaten down.
Yeah.
But when that would happen, I would think, you don't even know me.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And,
but then the point is, they don't know me. If they knew me, they wouldn't say those things.
Exactly.
You know, because they'd be like, oh, you're cool.
Yeah, exactly.
But, you know, that those are the kind of, you know, outside, you know, the outside forces.
Right.
That just, you know, hurl rocks at you, verbal rocks at you.
Yeah.
And, you know, the main thing is like, oh, just ignore them.
Right.
You know, just ignore them. And it's like, that's a lot has been, a lot, obviously, we all know, has been come to the fore about bullying, about, you know, what turned someone into a goddamn school shooter.
Right.
You know, there's a lot more understanding, compassion, and discussion around this kind of stuff.
Yeah.
But back when we were kids, it was mostly just ignore them.
That was it.
And so that's what I would do.
That's what you would get from parents. That's what you would get from teachers. That's what you would get from every adult would just be like, oh, ignore it.
Yeah.
Just ignore it.
Yeah. So that's kind of what I would do. It's like pretend not to hear that. I mean, obviously I heard them, but like not acknowledge them, which goes into my answer for Kit Kat, Kit Kat, Kit.
Yes.
About what do we do when strangers, you know, say shit to us. You know, should we tell them about being fatphobic?
Right.
And it's like, for the most part, no.
Yeah.
For the most part, they're not someone to dignify with a response.
Unless for some reason, this random stranger that you're talking to is somebody that you want to get to know for some reason.
Yeah, there's always that. Yeah.
Why would you want to get to know them if they are shaming you?
Yeah, there's always that kind of, it's like kind of like the person that would do that isn't someone you want to know anyway. Yeah,
that's exactly right.
But there could be cases where it's like, no, you know, they always have that thing like, I was a KKK member and I sat down with a black man and changed my whole life.
Exactly.
But in general, you know, it's if it's somebody behaving that way, they're not somebody worth putting the time in. It's interesting.
Yeah.
Because I was made fun of. I was pointed out and laughed at by strangers.
Yeah.
So so when I started on all that and I got recognized.
Right.
Then I had this whole other, I had all these people staring at me.
Right.
Which I only associated with them staring at me because
for bad reasons.
Yeah. Because I look at that fat girl or oh my God, or what are we going to say to her? And it took me a long time to adjust to that.
Yes.
So, you know, my interactions are good.
Right.
You know, with
it's like after years of being laughed and pointed at, now you're being laughed and pointed at for good.
And then hugged. So that was, you know, that was an interesting kind of mental change that I had to make in my perception of other people in the world around me.
Yeah. Well, here's what I remember. We were, I forget where we were in school, but we were at some point in Chatsworth at high school and we got into a war. There was a war going on. You and I spent, I don't know, 80, 90% of our high school lives in the drama department.
Yes.
And we were always in there. We were making plays. We were doing short story, whatever it was. We were spending all of our time in there. So yes, occasionally I'm sure you'd be walking around and some jagoff sitting with his friends in the quad would make a joke and you'd have to deal with it. That was one thing. It's a totally another thing when it's somebody that knows you.
Yeah.
Somebody that deals with you.
Yeah.
And then they use that as their first attack.
Yeah.
As like, we're getting into a big argument over, you know, school stuff or play stuff or something that's happening with our lives. Mm-hmm. And the immediate first attack on you is, of course, the weight.
Yeah.
That's a different situation.
Oh, yeah.
Than, you know, Joey No Name, who's sitting in the quad. That's somebody that knows you that you have to deal with.
Yeah.
How do you handle people like that? Because you can't tell them off, right?
No.
Because that's somebody that you're gonna have to remain in contact with.
Yeah.
So it's different.
I know what you're talking about. But obviously, I was there.
Yeah.
So tell me more and use all the names you can. That's difficult, but also, I mean, to say this, which is a little bit off topic, the way I've learned to handle things and people since high school has changed immeasurably, mostly as a result of me getting sober and getting support through that
community.
Yeah, exactly. I was like, system. I'm like, that's not the right word. Because I really am able to see people differently and see their motivations and see where they're coming from.
Right.
And I know that being assured that I'm right and treating people that don't agree with anger isn't the way to sway people or to just sow harmony.
Right. Exactly.
So if I had better social skills, which there's no way I would have at that point.
Well, you were all on defense.
Yeah.
You were permanently on perma defense.
But it's and I already felt outside of everything because of my weight.
Yeah.
You know, I was never going to be the star of the show. I was never going to be, you know, the leading lady or whatever.
Right.
And I didn't really have the confidence necessarily to do that because of my weight.
Right.
But that was really different. It's funny. I without mentioning names. there was just a really difficult year where
a group, there was like, let's say there, a group of three or four girls. A clique.
Yeah. Just really were going after me.
Yeah.
Partially because of the way I handled myself.
Yeah.
But also because they were dicks.
Yeah.
And they're probably better now.
I'm sure.
But I know that what always struck me is just this one moment where we were in the drama room. It was like during lunch or something or after school. And I had my earphones on.
Right.
Probably with my Discman.
Yes, exactly.
Trying to learn a song for a show we were doing or whatever.
Sure.
So I kept, you know, if you don't know behind the scenes, you listen to a little bit of it, you go back, you listen to it again.
Right.
Deep show business tricks.
Exactly.
Get a Discman. And I remember the main antagonist of that group talking to other people and to me, but I just ignored her because I had earphones on and I was like, I can pretend I don't hear. And she's like, yeah, that's what just, you know, people do when they're stupid. And she was going to say fat, I think, but one of the clique
was fat. Yes.
And I really feel like she might have been there.
Yeah.
So I think she ended up saying like, yeah, that's what people do when they're stupid and ugly.
Yeah.
And I really remember that so vividly.
Right.
I just fought back and I had a few friends that knew the score. And, you know, I made it through high school.
Yeah.
And then I got the job on Nickelodeon, which none of them got.
Yeah,
and
you were taken away from high school. That's the best part.
I was taken away. And Liam Neeson had to find me with this special set of skills.
Exactly.
Going to get fat. I will find you.
I'm not sure if we've fully answered that question, but we should probably move on. Let's move on to question number three. This is from Future Kitsch. And Future Kitsch asked, adding to the other voices who have said similar things, you made such a difference in my life. Through my being able to see someone so hilarious and smart on television, someone owning their life space, being comfortable in their own body and commanding the spotlight. Thank you. A related question. Were you aware at the time about how much of an inspiration you were to young girls and to all young people, probably?
Thank you so much for that question. And going through the responses, for every actual question we got, there were two or three or more people that just commented that I was an inspiration to them, yeah. That it was such a comfort to them to see someone that looked like them on TV and that they could be funny and yeah. All that kind of stuff.
Just a wave of those answers.
Yeah, just so many lovely compliments. And I really thank you. And then I really had to think about this because, you know, I wasn't confident.
Yeah.
I didn't feel good about myself. No. I wasn't comfortable in my own body. I'm still not.
Yeah.
And I thought, do I blow that illusion for people?
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
All you guys that are like, you were such an inspiration and seeing you up there and doing all that stuff. And as I was thinking about that, I said, you know, the inspiration is that I did feel awful.
Yes.
I did feel bad. I wasn't comfortable. I didn't have self-worth. And I still got up in front of a goddamn camera exactly. And did my job.
That's exactly you right. Know? And that is incredibly inspirational.
Yeah. And so I had to look at it like that and say, you know, I was there to be seen.
Right.
And that in the end is the most important thing.
Right.
Not, you know, that any of you think like, well, if you weren't happy as a clam doing cartwheels, then it's a lie.
Right.
But the drive in me, the fact that I found theater and acting that I just, you know, devoured, sorry, pun intended. No, yeah. No pun intended on our fat show. I devoured it. It really was this pull.
Yeah.
Really, when I first found it, was like, I want to do this always.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was strong enough to, you know, that won out over me being like, I don't want to go up in front of people.
Right.
I don't want to. The one time that I didn't do that was we were at over the summer at a local high school. No, I'm sorry, at a local college, there was a theater program. There was like a theater camp. Clark went.
Oh, yeah.
Tons of people went. What's funny is I'd had such a hard time in school, a really hard time in school that year. And then it was like, oh, I'll go to this thing, you know, for the first time, because people had been going for years.
Yeah, it was like a 45-year tradition.
So, and then I walk in and all the people in the class are like from high school. And I was like, God damn it. But one of the classes there was dance.
Yeah.
And I have good rhythm and I'm flexible and I've never had a problem doing it, but you had to do like a kind of a final project or whatever, or, you know, a dance.
Yeah.
And I think other people might have done it in groups, but I didn't have a group.
Wow.
And I told the teacher, or, you know, the instructor, I said, I don't want to do this up in front of everybody.
Was it Candy?
It was, no, what was her name? Oh, I just had it in my head. Were you in Cabaret?
Yeah.
She was the dance person for Cabaret.
Oh, okay.
With the short bob.
Yeah, I know who you're talking about.
Yeah, Danny.
Oh, yeah.
I think her name is Danny.
Yeah,
Danny, yeah. You're awesome. And I was just like, I can't do it.
Yeah.
I can't do it. You know, they'll be watching me and laughing at me. And not that I couldn't do the dancing, but it's like, I'm going to jiggle. I'm going to fuck up, whatever it is. And so she let me do it privately. She let me come in. I think there's one other person there, like during lunch or something.
Wow.
And do my thing. And she was like, that was great. There's no reason you couldn't do that in front of everybody.
Oh, that's great.
So that was the one time that I remember, like, you know, yeah, this is, I can't do it. But knowing that how I felt and that I had so much sadness and shame and everything about my body, about, you know, my weight, and still saying, no, I want to be on TV.
Yeah.
I'm going to be on TV and I'm going to be crazy.
Yeah.
You know, and that, to me, now that I can look at it objectively, that is the inspiration.
Right. That was a very brave moment.
Yeah. So to answer the question, did I think back then I'm going to be an inspiration for people? Like, no, I had no idea.
You were just kind of hoping you weren't going to be roasted live on television.
Yeah. I was hoping I wouldn't be an embarrassment to myself.
And your family and your friends and everyone.
But your dogs are like, we don't want anything to do with you, fatty. So I had no idea that I would have that impact.
Yeah.
I didn't have any idea until a couple years in when people would stop me and say that.
Yeah.
And there was one time at Disneyland when we were... I think we were coming out of Big Thunder Mountain and a bunch of people had come up to me as we were on our way, probably to Pirates or something. And she was like the fifth or sixth or seventh person. And I had stopped and taken pictures and I was a little, not that I was like over it, but it's like, I just wanted to go.
Yeah.
And I was a little bit like brusque with her and she kind of looked nervous and she said, I just want to tell you, you know, how seeing you on TV made me feel better about being a big girl. Like she wanted to express that to me. And I was so grateful that I wasn't like more of a dick and said like, no more questions, you know, but I mean, that stopped me in my tracks and I listened to her and we hugged and, you know, all that kind of stuff. So as time went on and I got more feedback, because at first it was just people on the internet saying like, why is that fat girl so fat?
Right.
And as I got more positive feedback and emotional feedback, we talked about this in the last show.
Yeah.
It started to dawn on me and I started to feel that guilt about like, everyone thinks I'm so great and the spokesperson and I hate myself a lot of the time.
Well, it also goes back to the question with the strangers. Of course, strangers that see you immediately, that's the first thing they think of.
Yeah.
But once somebody gets to know you, they realize that it's like, that's just one part of just an amazing person.
Yeah.
So it gets lost.
Yeah.
It immediately gets lost to anyone who either knows you or has spent time watching you.
Yeah.
They instantly get like, oh, that's just part of who you are and you're great.
Yeah.
And that was always the best thing to me.
I think, Clark, you just hit on the cure for all racism. If we could all just, I mean, it's true because it's really the same situation of looking at someone and judging them and how you feel about them because they're fat.
Right.
Or they're black.
Right.
Or they're Hispanic.
Right.
You know,
Jew.
The difference, or they're a Jew,
exactly.
Or they're, you know, whatever. There is a difference. There's a big difference. Let me make clear between the consequences of someone looking at me who was problematic because I'm fat and someone looking at someone as problematic because they're black.
Right.
You know,
right.
The racism and the violence and all that kind of stuff is a much different animal.
Yes.
But theoretically, if we could all just get together and get to know each other.
Theoretically, it's still the same species.
Yes, exactly.
Right? It might not be a tiger, but it's still a lynx.
Yeah, it's the same. It's the same concept. So all we have to do is make sure every single person in the world gets to know each other. It's like on The Simpsons in the episode, it's called Homerphobia. It guest stars John Waters. And, you know, Homer has this big problem with, you know, Bart spending time with this gay guy because he thinks Bart's gay now and all this stuff. And in the end, John Waters' character saves Homer's life.
Yeah.
And then Homer turns around. He's like, you're okay. And John's like, something like, I'm so glad you came around. And all I had to do was save your life. Now, if every gay man could just be the same, we'd be set.
Exactly.
You know, so
that's exactly
so
right.
Everybody in the entire world just has to meet everyone else they might have a problem with.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Well, and then let's turn that around to the listeners out there too. If future Kitsch is having issues with people being nasty and saying nasty things, clearly those people probably don't know you.
Oh yeah.
And you know what? Who the fuck cares about them? That's what I'm saying.
Like they're getting married and they're like, do you, Clark? And you're like, wait a minute, you're fat? I'm calling this off.
Exactly.
You run out holding hands with the maid of honor. Like a weird ending to The Graduate.
Exactly.
Hey, all you true crime fans. This is Mike Ferguson.
And this is Mike Morph.
And we'd like to invite you to listen to our podcast, Criminology.
Launched in 2017, we've covered a variety of strange cases from murders to missing persons. Some of the cases are ones you may not have heard of.
Other cases we cover are some of the most historic in true crime. There are 200 episodes of Criminology available to binge on right now. And new episodes come out every Saturday night.
Subscribe to Criminology today, wherever you listen to your podcast.
All right, let's move on to question number four.
Okay.
Question number four is from somebody named Not So Crazy Cat Lady. And Not So Crazy Cat Lady says, as many others, growing up with you on one of my favorite shows made me happy to know there were other big girls out there. You're an amazing person. I've always had pressure growing up to lose weight so I could, quote, be pretty. Have you dealt with a lot of pressure to lose weight and or have weight loss surgery? How have you stayed true to who you are against all of that?
Perfect. Thank you so much for your question. Yeah, the pressure to lose weight, I mean, beyond being picked on and having it be a crushing force in your life,
right.
And I was made fun of by family members. Like it runs the gamut.
Right.
And of course it's like, well, we just, you know, thought it would help motivate you.
Right.
It's like, no, exactly. You're a fucking asshole and an idiot.
Exactly.
But yeah, there's always that pressure. There is always that, well, you know, you'd be able to do this if you were thinner, if you just lost weight. And that, you know, not that I expect or would expect someone. I mean, there are reasons why you're fat, that like thyroid problems, all that kind of stuff.
Sure.
But to just, you know, be overweight, I don't know that anybody goes, you're perfect the way you are. I don't think you should be able to walk upstairs, right. You know, without having a, you know, asthma attack.
Right.
But the pressure to lose weight, it's more like the insistence and reminder that you're not good the way you are.
Right.
So I definitely had that.
Yeah.
Definitely had that from family members. You know, the outside, the bullies, that's kind of a different thing.
Exactly.
But because they weren't like, we're really, hey, he likes you. He's really concerned about your health. You know,
exactly.
But it's, you know, we want you to just be, you know, successful, right. And this and that. And the ultimate thing, you have such a pretty face. If you've ever said that to someone in your life, spank yourself in a bad way and yes. Don't ever say it again.
Yeah.
You know. You have such a pretty face. It's a shame you're fat so that you look disgusting and no one will look you in the face. That's what you're saying.
Yeah.
So there was that pressure.
Yeah.
And there was that, you know, and meanwhile, I come from a family, both my parents, severely obese.
Oh, yeah.
That's what I grew up with. Yeah. That's what I know. There's a reason that food is a comfort. There's a reason that I use food. To
as
a point
crutch.
Where, yeah, exactly. And so all of that was kind of like, well, what do you expect me to do?
Right.
You know? And there was, you know, stuff to try to make. Like I went to Weight Watchers as a kid.
Yeah.
I went to Fat Camp.
Yep.
Fat Camp was it's a very singular experience.
Really?
I wouldn't say it's a good experience. Mm. There's like so much going on.
Right.
And even at Fat Camp, I was the fat girl.
Really?
Like there's a lot of people at Fat Camp who aren't really obese. They're just, you know, counselors that want to get in shape or that they just have the qualifications for the jobs they have. Mm. And then there's tons of girls who are like young women who are perfectly beautiful and wonderful and think they're fat as pigs.
Of course.
And then there's little kids that are fat and you go, well, where are they getting their food from?
Right.
You know, does he live in his own studio apartment and he like just huffs down to Vons every week and gets what he wants? You know, and then you would have, like, I remember so vividly this one year they accepted the company behind them accepted a 6-year-old girl to come to fat camp.
Wow.
And the reason I remember it so distinctly and was so disturbed, I mean, it was just absolutely crushed me, because on the first day of camp, I was a counselor at that point.
Okay.
The first day of camp, she walks in, she is, you know, as tall as a 6-year-old and pudgy. She's short and pudgy. And, you know, that's her, sure. mother and her two sisters come in and they are tall and skinny. And then her dad walks in, who is like Danny DeVito.
Oh.
So she just looks, she's genetically.
She got the genes from her dad.
Like her dad. And I just thought, that is just awful.
Yeah.
You're telling this girl that she's fat and not good enough. And like, what? I don't know what they told her, but they sent her to fat camp.
Wow. What was the normal age for the fat camp?
I would say, she was a very, she was younger.
Not just she was young. She was like probably unusually young.
Absolutely unusually young. I would say there weren't many kids under 9 or 10.
Yeah.
So it was a very, I mean, that's why it stuck out so much in my memory, was because she was so unusually weird. That's why I started by saying they accepted.
Wow.
You know, it's like, oh, are you going to have this girl? And they were like, sure, there's money in it. And then when I just saw her dad walk in with his body shape, I'm like, how do you people not see that?
Yeah.
And now you're putting in her head that she's fat and not good enough because she doesn't look like her sisters.
Yeah.
She might never look like them.
Well, she will never look like them. They clearly have different genetic body types. Yeah. And I'm sorry, there are just some body types that are not meant to be slim, tiny little stick figures.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying that there's an excuse to be fat or an excuse to be obese. However, there really are just body types and metabolism types that don't slim down.
Yeah.
You might not be huge, but you're never going to be a stick unless you just stop eating.
Yeah.
So, you know, how horrible for that little girl who clearly has that second type of body.
Yeah.
And doesn't necessarily need to hate her body, right? If she liked her body, she could do the best with what she's got.
Yeah. And she's also 6 years old. She had like baby fat on her.
She has so much potential. You
know? But I just felt like, well, maybe the potential now is starting at 6.
Yeah.
Or even before that, if they're already thinking, what can we do with our kid? Right. She's so embarrassing.
Right.
You know, so that was just really,
sad.
Really a sad statement. Oof. But that was an anomaly that this one girl was little. But when I saw her parent, I was just like, whoa.
Yeah.
It just laid everything out so clearly. But I would say that a majority of it was preteen, teenage girls and boys. Definitely people there that just went to get like in shape.
Right.
Or probably that had bad body image, you know, to a certain degree. And probably it's like fat camp is like the horniest.
Oh, no.
The horniest frat party ever.
Oh, no.
So every guy, the chicks outweighed the guys. Not outweighed.
Right.
Well, they might have. Some of them did.
Yeah, sure.
But there were like, you know, 5 girls to every boy.
Oh, wow.
And they made use of it.
Wow.
And I'm not saying everybody was like fucking all over the place, right. But like, you know, a guy that would have been the chubby loser at like sports camp was like the big man on campus at fat camp.
Nice.
I'm the fat man on campus.
Did they separate the guys and the girls, I hope?
They did. Yes, they did.
Okay.
But, you know, we're together at the evening stuff. There's people, everyone sneaks away. I mean, regular camps like
sure,
that, too.
I saw meatballs.
You saw meatballs. You saw little foxes. We have had this exact conversation on another episode.
I think so.
So it was difficult, though, because it was really like, all you have to do is do it. You just have to eat right. And when you go home, you have to eat like this because they're handing you, you know, your food.
Right.
They're handing you your food to eat. You don't have to make any choices.
Right.
You know, all that kind of stuff. But it doesn't address really any emotional issues that go into
why
you might be that way.
Exactly.
And that was a real problem. Yeah. Like, I remember I wasn't there, but when I was a counselor, there was a story that a girl in another group, they were having like a rap session, talking session. And she said, she told them all that she had been raped.
Oof.
And she's a kid.
Oof.
And that is something that obviously she felt comfortable. She's like, oh, I'm at this camp. Wow. Everyone will understand.
Yeah.
And she chose to share that. And the response was the camp director called her mother and said, this is inappropriate for her to share.
Oh.
You know, I don't know what they said to the girl, but it's like, yes, you had trauma and now you're stuffing your face. We'll talk about this a little later too. You know, so the emotionality, which is a word I think I just made up, behind these issues was not discussed.
Dealt with,
it wasn't dealt with. It wasn't discussed. It was all about, you just have to have the willpower and you have to do this.
Right.
And, you know, just, you know, it's that thing. Just
if it's
same,
meant to be, it's up to me.
No, but akin with like neck and neck with you have such a pretty face as fucking shut your goddamn mouth. Statements to make is, well, when you're hungry, why don't you just snack on carrot sticks? It's like, shove these up your ass. Shove your carrots up your ass.
Okay, well, this actually brings me to a very good point where we can skip over to our rotating segment of the week, Inevitable Information.
And now, Lori Beth Denberg with more inevitable information for your everyday lives.
Thank you, Soup.
Thank you, Soup.
And today's
soup also figuring into our weight loss and food.
It's our whole food episode. We actually have another question. I know you guys love the questions. We got so many good questions that we found a good question that talks about or that asks for information not only on body image and weight, but also talks about your roles in dodgeball. And let me just get to the question.
Okay.
So Haunting Ghosty asks, love your podcast and everything you've done.
Thank you.
You've even done a few cameos for me in the past, and they were really sweet with your special touch to them.
Thank you.
I know your role in Dodgeball involved your weight. Did that mess with your body image at all? How can I become comfortable with my own?
That's a great question. I'll just start with the what you asked first. With Dodgeball, they handled the whole situation really well. And what I mean by that is sides are like the little script, little scenes that they send out to actors to prepare for the auditions.
Right.
They're called sides.
A couple of pages of the script.
Yeah, a couple of pages, maybe a couple of scenes. It's usually not more than 5 pages total.
Right.
And I had read every set of fat girl sides from here to the moon and back.
Right.
And the dodgeball ones were very well done, meaning it wasn't like fat cheerleader number 2. It was like Martha Johnstone. That was the character's name. You know, it wasn't a joke about, I wasn't eating a hoagie on the sidelines.
Right. The punchline of the joke wasn't your weight as much as it was your enthusiasm.
It was my enthusiasm. It was my weight as far as him lifting me up. And it was, and then me falling, and then my crotch was on his face when we fell.
Right.
But just the way it was handled in the wording, in the description of the character, was already, it was already clear that they understood what this was. Plus, it was funny. Plus, it was, you know, a Ben Stiller film. Like, it was above board.
Right.
And because we'll get to something else that
below board.
Yeah. So And I had to do a stunt. Like, there was all this stuff. It was a real professional movie. And the way that they even put the audition out was like, yeah, this is good. Oh. I mean, I wouldn't be the head cheerleader. It's a joke that I'm a fat cheerleader.
Right.
And I was cool with that.
Yeah.
And I think I was cool and comfortable with that because of how it was presented.
Right.
You know, if it had been
very professional, very considerate.
Because there's another one now that I think about it. It was Scary Movie 2, 3, 5, 6, who knows which one, that I got sent an audition for. And it was the play the fat girl who died. Like, there was a dog door in the garage door or something, and I was supposed to try to fit through it to get away from the killer, but I couldn't because I was so fat, and it, you know, the garage door lifted up and the character got murdered. Mm. And there probably was, like, you know, fat jokes and eating or whatever.
Sure.
And I remember I didn't go on the audition. I just said, you know, and it's not like I'm so famous or anything that I'm like, I don't need this work. Like, I always needed work. I always wanted work. But this, I said, I'm not going to this. Let somebody else have it. And then there were the Steve Harvey Show.
Oh, yeah.
Which, I mean, I know I told you just recently, dear listeners, that I'd read every fat girl character from here to Timbuktu.
Sure,
and I don't know that the ones I got for the Steve Harvey Show were the worst.
Really?
I'd ever seen. The worst I'd ever seen.
Wow.
To the point where I called my manager at the time and I said, I don't want the first time you hear I have a problem with this to be when they call and offer money.
Yeah.
So I just let her know. Every single line was about how fat I was and how much I was eating.
Wow.
And eating. And what was I eating? And it was on my face. And every single line.
Wow.
The character's name was Lydia Gutman. Lydia Gutman.
Huh.
Just atrocious.
Huh.
And I went for the audition and I knew that I'd nailed it. I knew walking out of there that I'd gotten the job.
This was, I mean, this was really soon after you left Nick, right?
Yeah, this was
really
very
soon, within a couple of months.
It overlapped a little bit.
Okay.
And I knew I'd walked, not because they told me I'd gotten it.
Right.
I just knew walking out that I got the job.
You were confident.
And so then they called and they offered me the job. And they offered me 2 weeks of work. So it wasn't just one, and it was like a guest star, like, just so you know, there's like different levels of actor, and it was a guest star, and it was money, and it was, I take that back, it was the first job I booked outside Nickelodeon.
Yes, that's what
I just
thought.
Still did some Nickelodeon stuff afterward,
right?
So,
but your full-time gigs at Nickelodeon were officially done.
Yes, I believe that's true. So I decide I'm going to take this job.
Sure.
And the reason is, and I think we might have talked about this before, you know, you read the script at the table read and everybody laughs and doesn't laugh. And based on that, they change it to say, oh, let's change this joke. Let's change this joke. And then they do revisions, the writers and producers, they give you a new script the next day. So I thought, okay, I can go in there. I can do what they do. I know shows get rewritten all week. Let's cross my fingers.
Yeah.
I went in there for the table read with the script as it was. And I did what I do, which was really fucking great, despite sometimes being an actor for me is making the best out of a bad situation.
Yeah.
This is a prime example.
Yeah.
So I just did what I did.
Yeah.
And people were really impressed. And I remember this one joke where it was the hot black guy fooling me into thinking we were going on a date so he could have a party at the house I was staying at.
Mm.
So he's just using me. And when I'm expecting him in the apartment, I'm getting everything ready perfectly and the bing bong. And I go, here's my chubby chaser now.
Mm.
And I was getting good laughs at the read through.
Yeah.
And when I said that line, Cedric, the entertainer specifically, kind of just looked down and shook his head And there was a real, like, oh, this seems so funny when we wrote it.
Right. Everyone started realizing what you realized the day you picked up those scripts.
Yeah. And kind of what you had talked about getting to know somebody.
Right.
I killed at that table read. When they went back and revised the script and we got the new one the next day, 99% of it was changed.
Wow.
There was one joke left about that I had eaten a cookie and had a chocolate chip stuck to my face still.
Okay.
Everything else had changed.
That's fantastic.
And there was never a fat girl joke after that. It was all that I was the smartest girl in school. It was all that I was Jewish, which was like this urban, you know, predominantly African-American, you know, community sitcom.
Right.
So it was like, oh, my dad owns a deli. And, you know, I really became, by the end of the show, my character was the smartest girl in school and the valedictorian.
Well, not to mention the fat joke character that you went into, that you auditioned for, could only last for 2 episodes, right? That kind of humor doesn't last. So the fact that they did change it probably opened up your character to being a more regular character on that show.
I'll take a little exception with that, because if you watch, I can't think of any right now, of course. But you can watch shows where the fat character has fat jokes made. Oh, that's their thing.
Right.
Those definitely are.
They exist.
But I really feel like when I showed up and did what I do,
right,
they realized, oh, there's more to this. Not only that there's more to this, but we're kind of embarrassed.
Yeah, and there's better humor.
Yeah.
There's better humor to be found with you being super anal and super productive in a group of kids that aren't productive, right? That was the key.
It was. And it just, that's one of the things I'm proudest of, that I took that job. And to their credit, the staff and the writers and the producers also saw there was an issue and moved on.
Yes. Quickly, too.
Very. I mean, in one day, basically.
Yeah, that's amazing.
In one day.
That's amazing.
And so, but that was, you know, a situation I really thought, you always hear people say, you know, oh, I don't want to take this job just for money.
Right.
Well, you're an actor and you're young and, you know, I didn't have any work going on.
Need to pay rent next month.
Yeah. And I'm trying to graduate from Nickelodeon because I'm, 24 at this point.
Right.
You know, it's like, okay, I took this job and it was a real gamble and it ended up paying off.
Yeah.
So as far as, the question about, did being in Dodgeball kind of fuck with my mind and my body image? I don't think it did.
Okay.
I don't think it did by that point. And even with Steve Harvey, I really just came in swinging.
Yeah.
And though they were such on opposite sides of the spectrum as far as completely disrespectful juvenile and then completely respectful, but this is the joke.
Yeah.
So everyone watch Dodgeball. Actually, if you watch Steve Harvey, I get residuals. Although I don't think I get residuals the more people that watch.
Well, you never know. So,
just watch Dodgeball.
Watch whatever you want. okay, thank you so much. That was a really good question. But let's move on to our final question of the day. And that is from James. James is from Instagram.
Okay.
And his question is, serious question, why do you eat so much? I know the answer is different for everyone. Just wondering if you would share your answer. You're a talented actress. All that was the gravy. All that was the gravy. I agree.
Yeah.
It's a good line.
Thank you, James. When I first read your question, I came across it, I thought you were a troll.
Yep.
I thought I asked for questions about image and, body weight and weight loss. And you said, I have a question. Why do you eat so much?
Right.
Because those are the kind of questions,
that you get
comments
constantly
that I've gotten before.
Yeah.
But then as I read the rest of the question, I realized you're not a troll.
Yeah.
You're really asking. And it's actually a great question.
It really is.
Why do I eat so much? Which to be rephrased in a not kind. I know you weren't being unkind. So in a more pleasing way,
yeah,
is why do I have such problems with weight and food?
Right.
And it is different for everybody.
It really is.
A lot of it has to do with trauma. And that's the case with me. Mm. Plus, like I said, nature versus nurture.
Yeah.
Both of my parents were extraordinarily, extraordinarily overweight.
Yep.
Food was the thing
yep.
to comfort. You yeah. know, food was the thing to numb celebrate. Out with. Yeah. To, well, celebrate. It's a bad day. It's a good day. Whatever it is.
Exactly.
Yeah. And so that was the substance that I was taught to go to.
Right.
But also, I am, I was sexually abused as a child. And it is extraordinarily common for victims of sexual abuse, or you're supposed to say survivors yeah. of sexual abuse, okay. I think, to gain weight when yeah. you hit puberty, to put on weight. And it's a protection.
Right.
A physical protection.
Yeah.
It's that if I don't look, if I'm ugly, no one will want to hurt me like that.
Right.
It is a really, really common occurrence.
Yeah.
And that was, you know, a large part of that, you know, a big part of my story.
Yeah.
Is the trauma from any abuse. Because I was also physically abused right. and emotionally. Like, I did not have a good time growing up.
Disney
guys.
Picture perfect yeah. childhood.
No, I did not. So that. All of those things contribute to me needing a coping mechanism
yeah.
and not have, and I was not taught successful. I was not taught healthy coping mechanisms.
Right.
I was taught food.
Right.
I was taught just ignore them.
Right.
You know,
bury your emotions.
Yeah, exactly. And it's like, okay, well then I'm going to do this by eating so much that I'm numb.
Right.
And I'm going to do this by, you know, not going outside and just sitting at home and watching TV, and which in the end, sitting at home watching TV paid off for me. Yeah. But, you know, that trauma and the lack of productive coping skills
yeah.
is still what I deal with today.
Sure.
You know, I still deal with that today. I've talked on the show before about how I'm, you know, almost 15 and a half years sober.
Yeah.
I still have behaviors that I did while I was using.
Hmm.
I still have sometimes a lot of that, you know, practicing bad self-care, procrastination,
yeah.
you know, all of this stuff, ignoring stuff that I need to deal with.
Right.
Even though I'm not using drugs or alcohol anymore, I'm still...
The routine is yeah. still in your brain.
Yeah, it's still in my brain, but the food, you still have to eat food.
Yeah, that's...
You know, totally. That's why there's... In a support group that I've been in for food as well, it's like, we're all like, man, they all wish that they were just drunks, because you don't have to drink alcohol.
Right.
You don't have to do heroin.
Exactly.
But you have to eat
every
at some
day.
Point. At, yeah. And so there's this kind of envy of like, ugh, I wish it was that simple.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's to answer the question, James, why do you eat so much? It's because... It's protection.
Yeah.
It's protection. And then it is the barrier, because I do want love and I do want a relationship. And there's plenty of guys that are like, I like your junk in the trunk.
Right.
Like
sure,
there's all that kind of stuff. But I feel badly about myself a lot of the time that I'm not pursuing it. I don't have the confidence to really go out and do that kind of stuff.
Right.
You know, and plus the relationship I've had have been just top notch.
Oh my God.
So I gotta throw in some resentment once a show.
Every show we need at least one moment.
So it's, you know, it's, hey, I'm eating this food to survive,
yeah.
to protect myself, to numb myself out.
Yeah.
And then it is a barrier for me to really having any sort of life, because I'm keeping myself from it
right.
while longing for connection and all the kind of things that I'm, you know, preventing myself from doing.
Right.
You know, within my own mind.
Yeah.
So that's my answer to why do you eat so much? And I appreciate that you put it that way, actually, James, because it really caught my attention.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then to follow it up with, you know, your really thoughtful explanation of that, I thought, because we always decide what's going to be the final question.
Yeah.
Like, it's usually more weighty. And when I saw that, I said, that's the final question.
Yeah. 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 Yeah.
So, I hope that answers it for somebody. There are a million different answers for that question.
Yeah.
So thank you so much for your response and your honesty and opening yourself up with what you gave back to us, because
it's hard to talk about. It's very hard to talk about this, and nobody likes talking about it. And I'm hoping it was fun to listen to.
This one was a laugh riot.
I hope you guys had a lot of fun. If you have questions for Lori Beth, please send it to us at AskLoriBeth.com. You can hit us up on all the socials at AskLoriBeth, or you can just leave a message with your name and where you're from at 1-855-DENBERG. That's 1-855-DENBERG. 1-855-336-2374.
And you can find me at LB Denberg on Instagram.
Yep.
I wrote it down this time, so nice. I said it right. And the Lori Beth Denberg fan page on Facebook. And at Lori Beth Denberg on Twitter.
Yay.
I wrote them down so I would say them like a young person. And you can find me to book a video at cameo.com/LoriBeth.
Thank you guys so much for listening. We had a real fun time, and I hope we hear from you again soon.
Yeah. Thanks so much, babies.
All right. Bye.
That Advice stars Lori Beth Denberg and Clark Crozier. The show is produced by me, Jeremy Balin, and part of the Seltzer Kings Network. Our theme song is written and performed by Natty Ward. If you or someone you love is in need of some bad advice, you can submit your own question on our socials, all of which are Ask Lori Beth, or on our website at AskLoriBeth.com, or for a nostalgic twist, you can call 1-855-DENBERG. That's right, 1-855-336-2374, and leave your question there. Thanks for listening.